We have some football to talk about today as the Bucks and Jets squared off literally and figuratively in joint practices up in New Jersey. We'll talk about the Bucks camp standouts and disappointments, as well as previewing the Bucks Jets preseason opener this Friday. All that and more on the Bucks Collective. Welcome to Bucks Collective. We are the OGs of football when it comes to the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. But is that original gangsters or just old guys? You be the judge. I'm Scott Reynolds from Pewter Report, and each week I'll be joined by Fox Sports' NFL reporter Greg Aumann and Tampa Bay Times' longtime Bucks beat writer Rick Stroud. The Bucks Collective is brought to you by HMA and presented by Prize Picks, America's number one sports app. Sign up for Prize Picks. When you use the promo code HMA, new users can play $5. And if you use that $5 to win your first lineup, you're going to get $150 in bonus lineups with your first win. So there you go. We're off and running here. We thought we were going to see some football today, Rick, but it turned into foot brawl. Were you surprised at all that Luke Getteke was at the heart of the fisticuffs for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers? Tell us what happened. You were up there in New Jersey today watching practice.
Yeah, first of all, where's the esprit de corps? Where's my running mates here? Come on now, get on up to the Big Apple. Let's go. It was interesting. You know, these things happen almost every time there's a joint practice, but not to this degree, right? Not to this frequency, and not with Luke Getteke involved in every single one. it was something. I mean, you know, it was Getteke going against David Bailey, and I guess Bailey called him out in the one-on-ones. And then when they got into the team setting, Getteke kind of let him have it. It just was a benches clearing type deal. He thought he was cheap shotted by another linebacker, Kingsley Inebari, I guess. And at the end of the day, the humorous thing, and one that wouldn't have been so funny if it happened in a game, is that first he tossed the Jets helmet about 20 yards. I mean, he just flipped it out there. Now, had it been a game, he'd have been the one that was tossed next by the officials. Had officials there actually, you know, doing the game. And I'm surprised they didn't all just throw a ton of laundry on the field when he did it. Right. But they didn't. And, you know, you remember this too, Scott. Like back in the day when Tony Dungy was coaching, we saw him toss quite a few guys out in joint practice,
right,
including Hardy, Nickerson, and others. And my thing was, right, and I said this to Todd, you know, you do this in a game, you're going to be ejected. You're going to be without a right tackle. You're going to cost your team 15 yards. And, you know, you can't stand for it. He goes, well, I was on the other field. No, man. you know, you let that go, and it could seep its way into a game. But it was entertaining. It wasn't always good football. Like you said, there was foot brawl. But at the point of the spear the whole time, you know, was one Luke Getteke. So it was kind of humorous.
And he wasn't the only one getting into it. A'shaun Robinson got into a scuffle,
yeah,
too.
Oh, yeah.
And so there were multiple fights that broke out during practice today. And, Greg, the interesting thing is these guys see each other again tomorrow. This was not just like, right, hey, we'll see you on Friday in the preseason opener. No, they're going to do it again tomorrow.
Right. Normally you save this for the last day. Like the going off, you can't get – if you try and retaliate the next time you see me, it'll be a penalty, like Rick said. But they, right, got it out of the way today. It was funny. We asked Todd before we left, like, hey, what can you do to kind of curtail the inevitable fighting? And Todd's all like, oh, but that's not why we're going there. We're going there to practice and get better. And he, as Rick said, he said, if you fight in a game, you get ejected. If you do it in practice, you probably get tossed too. And nobody got tossed today. Todd said he was on the other field when it happened. Like, oh, I didn't see it. I was on the other field. Right. I think there's certainly a little bit of venting in terms of just letting these guys have some steam. We saw it in the indoor when they were still going against their own teammates. So it's not that surprising that there's some venting going on between players. I'm sure there'll be a little of it tomorrow. I hope I hope we can recount that next week, I guess.
You know, on Sunday when I was out there watching practice, that was really the first time that I think the Bucs offense really stood up, because the defense, I think we all would agree, kind of won the first week in pads. But Sunday, it was really more of a give-and-take type practice, and maybe even the offense won. We saw some highlight catches from Ted Hurst. Rick, what was who won today? Did the Bucks win? Did the Jets win? Was the Bucks defense better than the offense? How would you kind of what did your scorecard look like after the end of the practice?
Well, I thought the Bucks defense won for the most part against the Jets offense. Maybe that's not a surprise. Look, Geno Smith threw a couple of interceptions fairly early and often, you know, in that that little bit of scrimmage that they had there. And you saw one by Pepe Williams, who just keeps making big plays. Alex Anzalone had one as well. So Geno didn't make a very good accounting of himself. And I thought that the Bucks defense did a nice job kind of bottling up the run as well. Offensively, they were just okay. You know, there were some good throws to Chris Godwin. There was one, you know, down the field to Emeka Buka. But I think for the most part, a lot of short passes, nothing spectacular, some missed throws as well. They're just kind of trying to get into their offense a little bit. But I wasn't, you know, blown away by the Bucs offense by any means. It's just in the Jets, to their credit, they have a pretty good defense. You know, they can coach defense when they want to. So that was kind of a stalemate to me a little bit. But you know, they made plays. There just weren't a lot of big plays and splash plays. But again, I do think that at times they ran the ball pretty well, you know. And it was all three running backs. It wasn't just one guy. You're going back to Trotter, though. Scott, I'll be damned if this guy doesn't look like he's played in the league for about 5 or 6 years. I mean, he absolutely, when he comes downhill and fills that hole, he's in the backfield. He's making tackles for losses as much as he is just tackles. I mean, and with you know, a lot of attitude that they wanted, this is exactly what they hope they drafted. And we continue to say it. That, you know, if you've got a guy like Reuben Bain Jr. and Trotter as the anchors of your defense, boy, that's something you can really build around. And I do think that A'shaun Robinson's bringing some stuff. Now, you can't let it seep into the entire team where Luke Getteke loses his mind and gets you a bunch of penalties. And for that matter, the defense might too. But they played with a lot of energy and got after it. And that's what you like to see. You like to see guys, you know, into it. You know, they showed up and they played right away. They didn't kind of ease into practice. We've seen that, Scott, where, you know, the first half of practice, they kind of were sleeping. Right. And then they picked it up a little bit. No, these guys, when they blew the whistle, they were ready to go. And I think that's the sign of a mature team. I think seeing Anzalone get his hands on a football in the passing game was exactly what they need. So, you know, all in all, pretty good day for the Bucks, and we'll see what tomorrow brings. Maybe they got it all out of their system, but and we'll talk about this later. I think these are more interesting days than what Friday night's going to be, and especially now that the Bucks may be at quarterbacks 3 and 4 before they get to Friday.
Let's talk about that, Greg, because you know you're not supposed to hit the quarterback, and by all accounts, the Jets didn't hit the quarterback for some reason. Jake Browning decided to roll to the left. There was about 4 Jets defenders there. He tried to, I guess, put a juke on somebody, ended up injuring his back. But that does have some repercussions because today, Greg, we found out that, surprise, surprise, Baker Mayfield not going to play on Friday night in the preseason opener. But Jake Browning was supposed to start, and that may not happen unless he has some miraculous recovery and is out at practice tomorrow. What does that do for the young Jalen Daniels, the rookie out of Kansas, and Connor Bazelak, who was the surprise quarterback number 3 last year in the depth chart, beating out Contrast?
Yeah, the whole game's an undercard now, in that you have 3 and 4 going to see who might be 3. But honestly, that's one of the things I was looking forward to in this game. You have Connor Bazelak was, you know, undrafted rookie last year, got elevated to have some time on the 53, never played. You kind of wonder, does it hurt him and that he has a year in the offense, but now it's a new offense. So that helps Jalen Daniels. And I think there's been a fair amount of buzz around Jalen Daniels just in the first 3 weeks of camp. Somebody that was expected to get drafted, didn't get drafted, chose the Bucks, you know, and then that's, I can see why he would, because the Bucks haven't invested a lot in their backup quarterbacks. So if you were trying to pick a spot in a good offense with a limited amount of competition, that's what Tampa Bay has. So in Jalen Daniels, you have somebody who, you know, now I was going into this game singing a half of Jake Browning and then a quarter each of Bazelak and Jalen Daniels, but now you probably gotta have a half each, I would think.
Yeah.
And that also means at least one of them. They might want to let both these guys have some reps with the best players. And I don't think we're going to see the Godwins and the Bucky Irvings of the world at any point Friday. But just
certainly not Jalen McMillan, right?
But if you can get receivers 5 through 7 instead of receivers 10 through 12, it's a little easier for you to look like a good quarterback. So I think, again, to enjoy a preseason football game is to appreciate the competition for what might be a practice squad number 3 job. But that's what we'll have Friday. And again, Jalen Daniels, I mean, fairly consistently has drawn praise. I mean, we talked to Zach Robinson, and Zach said that he had one of the strongest arms he's ever worked with. And Zach Robinson has been in the league for a while, has worked a lot of good quarterbacks. So for him to have praise for somebody that the entire league didn't think was worth a 7th-round draft pick a couple months ago, it feels like they got a good spot there. And what's fun now is that they not only are choosing between Bazelak and Jalen Daniels, but they're also choosing, do you think you can get him through waivers and sneak him in on the practice squad, or do you have to carry a third quarterback on your 53? And every time they make a play in preseason, it's harder to sneak him through waivers now.
It is, absolutely. One of the guys we're not going to see Friday, I mean, we'll see him, but he'll be on the sidelines in street clothes, is Emeka Buka. But we saw him today, didn't we, Greg?
Yeah, this is one of the funner clips. One of my Fox Sports colleague, Ralph Vecchiano, was there. He's a New York-based writer, and he was there covering today. And it's out there. You're taking video on your phone in the bright sun. You don't always even know what you're uploading sometimes. So Ralph posted this great video, and he just kind of had it as, hey, Baker Mayfield going through throws. Doesn't even realize there's this crazy one-hand circus catch that Emeka Abuka had. It's just a walkthrough. It's just a jog route. But it's one of those where he's up, and when you see it, it's a wild catch. And it's one of those catches where we've seen glimpses of Abuka making what we would call Odell Beckham-level catches. Again, this is on air against nobody in a walkthrough. It's still a pretty cool catch to see. So Ralph didn't even know what he had when he posted it. And then I look later, and all the aggregators have picked it up and doing screen grabs of Emeka having his arm up over his head. Not against anybody, but it's a reminder that we saw glimpses of that from Abuka in terms of the acrobatic midair highlight reel catches he's capable of.
Let's take a look. That's pretty impressive.
Just barely in the frame. You have to almost need to like slow it down to fully appreciate it, but it's a sweet catch.
Yeah. The Buccaneers sent out some B-roll footage of some of the practice plays today. Let's just take a look at those. Ricky, if you want to kind of do some narrating, because, again, you were there, starts off with some defense, which I like as a defensive-minded guy. But this is what the Jets had to see, a lot of Yaya Diaby and Reuben Bain and Josiah Trotter.
Yeah, and I think that Yaya does a nice job of setting the edge there. They couldn't run the ball inside because of Trotter. Trotter is just, shooting those gaps so fast, and he's a big-bodied guy. I really think that Bowles' decision to try to get bigger on defense was the right one. The game, just keeps ebbing flowing. There was a time there where you needed, maybe smaller, faster guys. But now, the running back, the rebirth of the running back coming downhill, some bigger backs in this league. Certainly the Sabathia Dennises aren't really going to hold up inside. So, to get big bodies in front of big bodies. And Trotter has those things you can't teach. He's just got instincts, Godwin, as I mentioned, had a pretty good day. Chris has just been solid, which is what you hope that he'll be this year. And I thought as a receiving group, they did a pretty good job. They've got some depth there, as some of those guys develop, it's going to be pretty exciting if they can stay healthy, but they do have a lot of players. And, I was talking to Chris Godwin today, and he's just like, Emeka just put so much pressure on himself last year, but he just continues to get better and better. He really thinks he's going to take off. And even if he doesn't, pick your poison, right?
So many guys, Ted Hurst, Jalen McMillan, Tez Johnson.
Yeah. And McMillan, McMillan is the most interesting guy to me because I think he's got a huge upside. And
I do too.
He's tough as hell. What he went through last year was not easy. I've always said that if I'm in a street fight, I want Godwin to be with me because he's the toughest guy I've ever seen, man, from what he's been through. But a lot can be said about Jalen too. I mean, I don't know about you guys. I couldn't wear a neck collar. I'm so claustrophobic now as it is, but what he went through to come back and play,
crazy
big body receiver, he's long, And you know what he is? He's just very fluid. Good route runner, yes. In and out of breaks. You watch him run routes, and it's like there's no effort at all. It's just like water.
Yeah.
So smooth.
Yeah.
Smooth. And Baker has lots of weapons if they can protect them up front. You know, at some point we got to see Tristan Wirfs. And I won't even talk about Vita Vea yet, who is here, by the way, and just kind of walking around doing what Vita Vea does. So all that seems to be at a big, you know, impasse right now. But they definitely have weapons, and they definitely had decent days. But I didn't think that they were great on offense. I thought they were good. And I thought they ran the ball well, too, which is good to see.
Mm-hmm. You know, when I look at this offense, we have to keep in mind that not only are the Bucs without Tristan Wirfs, he is their best player, not just best player in offense. He is their best player. He's literally one of the best players in the entire league. This offensive line, the 4 out of 5, you know, Bench Aquilma's, you know, had kind of two rough practices back to back. David Walker got him a couple of times on Sunday. He didn't fare too well against the Jets today, apparently.
He was not great today. No.
Yeah. When you've got 4 out of 5, that's a good offensive line. I mean, there's some talent there. When Tristan Wirfs comes back, that's an elite offensive line. That's a top 1, 2, or 3. Pick your favorite team, but they're up there. They're that elite of a unit. And he is the eraser on the blind side of Baker Mayfield. He is the guy that will lock down anybody on that side and keep Baker clean from the backside. He will demolish you in the run game. He's athletic enough to get out there on screens and make plays down the field. I think this Bucs offense has been good so far. I think it has a chance of becoming great when Tristan Wirfs comes back. But Greg, let me ask you, the offense has underwhelmed a little bit given all of the continuity, in my opinion, and maybe we're just missing Tristan, but with all of the continuity, the offensive line's pretty much back except for him, all the wide receivers. I know Mike's not here, but they have a lot of talent. They have got three really capable backs. Is the Bucs defense just this good, this fast? Or, in other words, is the Bucs offense really good too? It's just this defense leveled up even faster than we hoped. Or are we in for a little bit of a surprise where maybe Todd Bowles' unit is going to have to wear the superhero cape a little early in the season as Zach Robinson's offense kind of finds its footing?
Yeah, if the defense is the stronger side of this team, that'll be a wild development. And that it hasn't been that case. And I think part of the reason we hear more about the defense is because that's what's new and that's what's different about this Bucs team right now. So my eyes always go to what are the new guys and how are they fitting in? And there's so much that's new in that front seven. I mean, it really should be 5 of 7 starters that'll be new there between the middle with Anzalone and with what will eventually be Josiah Trotter there. I know we still see Servasia Dennis working with the ones, but I think that's Trotter's job by the time we get to week 1. So the middle is entirely new. A'shaun Robinson, especially with Vita Vea out right now, is obviously going to be new. I think of Kancey as being a new piece just because he was out for so much of last year. But then you add, you know, easily probably right now three of the top five outside edge rushers are new between Bain, Muhammad, and David Walker now. So to me, why I've noticed them so much, it was a concern last year. It was definitely a weak spot in the second half of last season. And I think you think about how little they did on the back end of the defense. They're trusting that everything they did up front there will make the back end look better, make them better just by not having to keep them on an island so long waiting for plays to be over with. So the offense, I still think of the offense as the stronger side of this team right now. And like you said, it starts just with incumbency and the continuity of having so many receivers. And it's scary to think that you could lose Mike Evans and still feel good about the receiver group. You could lose, you know, again, they lose Rashad White. I think most people probably feel better about Kenny Gainwell than they did who Rashad White was at the end of last year.
Right.
And then tight end, it's not like they put a lot in their tight end, you know, put a 5th round pick into a guard, you know, Ted Hurst is probably the biggest newcomer of the receivers.
Right.
But I think that side, especially when you think about the expected upgrade of going from Josh Grizzard to Zach Robinson, having his experience, having his familiarity, it should be a better offense. And honestly, the best way the offense can be better is just being healthy. That's such a you don't really have control over it. But if that line is intact, if that receiving core is the same and has depth and can work guys in and out, Mm-hmm. You don't have to worry about Sterling Shepard coming in and getting 40 catches, that kind of thing. That's the single biggest thing that'll help this offense get back to being like a top 10 unit.
Here's the thing. You can't play without your left tackle. I don't care what team you're talking about. And when you've got an all-pro left tackle especially, there's such a drop-off. Look, you know, Chukwuma's a great story, right?
Yeah.
Justin Scull is back. Those guys are light years away from Tristan Wirfs. And when they're on the field, it's obvious, right? And you can't hide a left tackle. Their best backup left tackle might be Graham Barton.
That's right.
I'm serious.
Well, Rick, to your point, those two games that Chukwuma started at left tackle down the stretch, the Saints game in Tampa was a loss.
Yeah.
And the Miami Dolphins game on the road was
not
a loss.
Good. No, it was not good. Yeah. And I don't think he's had, at least up here, for sure, he didn't have a very good day at all. Yeah. And I don't think that Justin is we've seen what he can do against Aiden Hutchinson and others. So and what it forces you to do is, you know, now you're using a tight end, you're using the running back to chip. It's such a luxury to say, hey, one on one, no one's gonna beat my guy, my backside, my blind side is clean.
Yeah.
That's such a relief to the quarterback. And I think when they have had trouble on offense against their defense or anyone else's, like today, they don't have their left tackle. I mean, who can go out there without your all-pro left tackle and think you're going to be anywhere near what you should be? So it's so imperative for Tristan to not only get back, but to get back and be Tristan Wirfs. And he's going to be dealing with that knee. You know, it's not what it was when he came into the league, but guys play with it, and he will too. But I think that's something to watch, because there's no team that can really survive that, and I don't think the Bucs could either. I think the offense would look so much like it did last year if Tristan Wirfs isn't playing. And that would be the one, you know, for all the, hey, Chukwuma, we got Scott. Like, you're not going to win many games with those guys. I don't think.
I agree. We have a super chat here. Let's get to this question here. We'll stop the show for
first
a super chat.
Super chat.
We love it. SRQ Salt with the $1.99 super chat. How long until Trotter passes Dennis on the depth chart, Greg? When I looked at the depth chart this morning, I found a lot of holes in this depth chart. I was not very fond of this depth chart. Yeah, Benjamin Morrison, who hasn't even played any type of team drill yet. He's done individual stuff here or there. He hasn't really truly had a full practice since the OTAs, and he was like the second string cornerback. I mean, Aiden Garnes has played way better than Benjamin Morrison because he's actually played and done things like broken up passes and picked off passes. You mentioned Pepe Williams today, Rick. I mean, pick six today. He's shown up and he's making a run at this roster as well.
Yeah, absolutely.
But for Servasio Dennis, this literally has to be just a placeholder right now on the depth chart, because I found a lot of holes in this depth chart, and that was one of them. I'm thinking, wait a minute. Josiah Trotter is coming on like a sledgehammer right now, and I can't believe that Servasio Dennis has any chance of being the week one starter.
That first depth chart always yields to veterans, always keeps the rookies in their place. I would compare Servasio Dennis and Josiah Trotter. If you guys know the Braves used to do the thing in center field that was beat the freeze, and they put kind of Joe Fan gets about 100-foot head start. He's got to go from one side of the outfield to the other, and they got the freeze and his track suits, which is fast as can be, and just makes up a ridiculous amount of ground to where the poor Fan is lucky he didn't fall down trying to run. That's the way Trotter looks to be picking up steam here. I think they want to make sure they ease more onto his plate, make sure he's comfortable. But as a playmaker, as what they drafted him to be, you don't take a guy in the second round if you don't expect him to be a contributor and a starter from day one, and that's what he'll be.
Yeah. Another super chat here from SRQ Saw, $1.99. Love it. Thank you very much for filling up the Bucks collective coffers here on a Tuesday night. Is Benjamin Morrison headed for the PUP list?
He can't.
That's right.
Yeah, he'd have to be on the PUP list from the start. PUP is a little bit tricky in that PUP. You can't be out there. You have to have a priest. So he could certainly start the year. I mean, I think there's still 5 weeks to the start of the season. And I think if he isn't back on the field by the end of next week, I'll be very surprised in that you see him kind of going through things. It just looks like someone they're being really careful with, honestly. And it's troubling that here, this is the third week of practice and he hasn't gone. So I know that's disappointing. That's something that's a concern for people. He still has five weeks to get ready for the opener. So I Pop or starting the year in IR, he would have to have a setback. He'd have to really have to aggravate that hamstring for him to be really in question for week one and any kind of anything but on the 53. Good question.
Speaking of depth charts, Jacob Parrish is your starting corner opposite Zion McCallum right now. If it were to go that way, and it very well could, now you're looking at maybe a Keontae Scott playing nickel. So there's another rookie that you could have on there. You could have three real big time contributors in this rookie class.
One on each level.
I think going forward, man, they're gonna be the foundation of this defense.
It's interesting because you mentioned Keontae Scott and Jacob Parrish. Keontae Scott just had a birthday. He's like 3 years older than Jacob Parrish is. So he's the rookie, right? So let's real quick, let's get some camp standouts here. Rick, we'll start with you. Give us one on offense and one on defense. Just from, you know, everyone's going to have a bad day or two. You know, Ben Chukwuma was actually trending up until these last two practices. Then he's kind of not trending in the right way, but I think had more good practices than not. But give me an offense and a defense camp standout as you have seen, Mr. Schreiber.
I mean, we talked about Pepe Williams. He was really good today. I thought Alex Anzalone was good. He had a pick six early. Mm-hmm. You know, his length shows up, I think, in coverage. He wasn't perfect.
Yeah.
But we got our eyes on Trotter so much, but Anzalone's right behind him, right with him. And so
he's looked good in camp.
He's been very solid, you know, sometimes spectacular, but solid. And after what they did last year in coverage in particular, you know, to me, they're going to use, no matter what, they're going to use Trotter in rundowns. Maybe they go to a big nickel or bring in an extra defensive back on some passing downs. But, you know, Trotter has been a star in this whole thing. But Pepe showed up. I tell you, Al-Quneen Muhammad also had a good day. He was beating Max Mitchell, you know, routinely. And you know, we forget about him. This dude had 11 sacks last year. Now he's playing opposite, you know, Aiden Hutchinson, which helps. But you know what? He's going to be playing opposite some pretty good players down here too. And so, you know, he may pick up 8 or 10 down here as a specialist. You just don't know. So he had a good day as well.
Yeah. The cool thing about him is that he didn't start a game last year. So to get 11 sacks.
Right.
Without starting, without having the snaps you need to use it. I don't think there's many guys in the league that get double-digit sacks as off the bench. So even if he's the third or the fourth rusher, that's what he's capable of doing.
But he got the premium rushes. You know, when that guy comes off the bench, it's third and I got to throw it, right? So those are the looks you want. He didn't have to play first and second down to earn third down. He just came in and cleaned up, so that helped.
How about on offense? Anybody really has stood out? Because I think we talked about how Ben Chukwuma kind of got off to a good start and then has kind of not looked good these last couple of practices. But Ted Hurst had a kind of a quiet start to training camp, but he is really kind of ramped up. Sunday, he had two absolutely fantastic catches.
Yeah.
And just, you know, you hate to use the term, but I'm going to use it. Mike-like. He did Mike-like things. And I'm not talking about Mike Williams. I'm talking about Mike Evans using that size to go up and high point the ball, moss a couple of you know, defenders and make some plays down the field. That's exactly why they drafted this guy. So I think him, the whole backfield to me looks impressive. Bucky Irving is back. This guy is ready to go.
Yep.
He looks like he is mentally and physically like in tune with what's happening. And what I like about this, Greg, is Kenneth Gainwell has been absolutely impressive too. He got a lot of carries during the offseason. Now he's getting a lot of targets thrown his way, screens, swing passes, and all that. He's being used as a receiver, where I think they're kind of force feeding Bucky the carries that Bucky missed during the OTAs with that shoulder surgery recovery. And Sean Tucker, every time he gets the ball, he's a big play waiting to happen. But what I think is interesting is, you know, we've seen in Tampa Bucky and Rashad White, right? And we've seen in Atlanta Bijan Robinson, the speed back, and Tyler Allgeier, the big hammer. We've seen kind of like the smaller and the really big back in both Atlanta under Zach Robinson and then in Tampa with Bucky Irving. But now Zach has got three running backs that are all very similar size that can do very much the same thing, catch it and run it and pass protect. Bucky probably the least capable in that area of the three. But does that help this offense? Because there's not really a tell for the defense where, oh, Rashad White's in the game now. these are the plays based on film study. They're going to run with him as opposed to Bucky. Isn't it like a little bit of a shell game now that Zach Robinson has three backs that all kind of look the same and can do the same thing?
Yeah, and what's fun too is that they're nearly identical in how they can be used. Like they had a moment where you can line them up. They call it pony package. They're both in the backfield, and you don't even know which one is going to flare out to the slot because they both can literally in the same play. You could go from pony to empty, and now you have two guys in the slot. The way they use Kenny Gainwell has been really fun to watch because I've honestly seen more catches than carries. And when I think yes. about that, and I think about the depth at receiver and how they're probably five deep of guys they can use in a lot of ways, it wouldn't surprise me if Kenny Gainwell were to lead this team in receptions this year.
Yeah. Yeah, I could totally see that as well. And he's going to get a lot of those opportunities just to touch the ball, right? Whether it's a catch or a carry. Let's kind of round it out. Any other camp standouts, offense or defense? We haven't talked about David Walker yet, who honestly has been the best player in camp. His sack streak might have come to an end today. Rick, you and I, we've seen a lot of Bucs football, and as great as Warren Sapp and Simeon Rice and some of these guys are, I can't recall any Bucs legend, Shaq Barrett, you know, you name him, having a sack in nine straight practices. The caveat, though, of course, is David Walker has been on the third string going up against the backup offensive tackles a lot of the times. But he's been wrecking havoc in practice. We have to mention him. How did David Walker look today? And I'm curious to see how he's going to perform in Friday's game going up against the Jets, who, as Aaron Glenn said, they're going to play everybody on Friday, yeah. where the Bucs are probably going to rest their starters.
Yeah, and for David Walker, he hasn't played in a football game in a very long time. You know, he didn't get to preseason last year. He was with that torn ACL. So this getting back into a game, you know, a full speed, full contact game, I think is going to be a big hurdle for him. I'm amazed, you know, what they can do with the torn ACLs, but he's had a full year plus. So that's the good news for him. But a lot of those things you see that they saw on tape at Central Arkansas, the bend, the get off, the strength, it's all there. And to me, he's just we don't forget about him, but what a bonus he would be if he shows up, right? And also because of his size, he has the ability to bounce inside at times, you know, during certain rushdowns as well. So I think his versatility is going to probably force him onto the field a little bit more than some. I'm excited to see. This is the perfect game for David Walker to just have a coming out party against what will probably be the second and third offensive lines of the New York Jets as well. I don't think anybody is going to play their frontline guys for very long if they play them at all. So, you know, 38 sacks last year, the fewest under Todd Bowles since he came in 2019. You got to change that. But I think you change it by stopping the run and they did a good job statistically last year, but it just seemed like it was too easy for other teams to convert. You know, this year, I think they have a chance. You know, it's interesting that they're kind of hedging their bets a little bit. Like, we didn't even talk about Chris Braswell, and I actually saw Chris Braswell come alive today a little bit.
Right.
And maybe, you know, nothing like, are you on the bubble? Could you lose your job this year? Is there a roster spot for you if you're not just an animal on special teams? I don't know that there is. So these games are big for guys like Braswell, who's in his second year now. He's been through a season. He's been through a preseason. He sees what's in front of him. And it's now or never for him. So I like in the aggregate, you like what the Bucs have done on defense. I think it's going to pay off. I think the size is going to pay off. I think the young players, Bain and Trotter, are going to be foundational pieces. You know, the secondary is scary to me, Scott, because there's no depth there. There's your two hopeful starters. We don't know about Morrison just yet. And then Pepe Williams and, you know.
And Aiden Garnes, right? I mean, a rookie. You've got an undrafted free agent rookie.
Yeah, you know, an undrafted guy. And look, he's played well, but – you're going up against the Cincinnati Bengals. What if week one, you know, sometime in practice, you lose a corner or two?
Yeah.
We've seen it where both corners have gone. I remember, you know, Coach Sherman coming in here and playing, you know, in 3 days.
And Pierre Desir. Yeah, Pierre Desir.
So it happens. And you don't want it to happen to them because I think that's where they're vulnerable. I think they really need more depth and experience, proven depth, as opposed to guys that are getting their first bite of the apple.
Yeah, we didn't see Zion McCollum out there at practice today, but Zion has – he has – 3 interceptions. I mean, he maybe is turning the corner. I'm going to credit Rashad Johnson, the new cornerbacks coach. I think he's reaching these younger corners better than old man Kevin Ross did. And I think we're seeing him more confident.
He might have.
He's got 3 interceptions, and we haven't seen 3 interceptions at any point in time in camp, in OTAs, and certainly in the regular season from Zion McCollum. So maybe he's turning a corner. Speaking of picks, we've got some prize picks to get to here. Where did Rick go? There's Rick. Join us for the prize picks, Rick. Let's get the prize picks going here. We're looking at a couple of familiar faces here, Greg.
Yeah, week one. Obviously, Bucks go to Cincinnati, and that'll be a tough one. I think when people hear about these injuries at corner, they keep talking about Jamar Chase, T. Higgins in week one, all the fun that might be. You can look ahead to that and over-unders for T. Higgins, for Jamar Chase. You think about Jamar Chase, last time he had a full season with Joe Burrow, triple crowned the NFL, most catches, most yards, most touchdowns. The over-under is just a half a touchdown there. Does he get one or does he not? Same thing. You think about the over-under for Emeka Buka being 1 yard away from that for T. Higgins. I think we don't know how it's going to shake out. It might be a different Bucks receiver leading them in targets, leading them in yards every week. But you think about how strong Emeka was in week one last year. If this is anything like it, then 59.5 won't be a problem for him at all.
Yeah. So America's number one sports picks app is Prize Picks. And when you sign up using promo code HMA, new users play $5 and get $150 if you win. Super simple and easy to use. Basically, just set your lineup. You need to have at least 2 of your picks, and once you do that, you're going to hit more or less. And you can also kind of manipulate those numbers a little bit. If you see a goblin or a devil, the goblin means that's a little green guy. That means that you have more favorable odds to get that pick right. You're not going to perhaps win as much if you go that direction, but if you go with the devil, well, that's a harder bet to kind of win. And so when you look at Prize Picks, there's a lot of different ways you can win, but it's simply more or less, and you can manipulate those numbers a little bit to increase the odds in your favor. Again, Prize Picks, new users play $5, get $150 if you win, and bonus lineups, use promo code HMA when you sign up. Guys, I want to get your thoughts on Baker Mayfield in terms of how he's looked. We've heard that he is locked in terms of being focused. How has Baker looked in this offense? Has he had more good days than bad, more good throws than bad? Where do you see Baker Mayfield's training camp? Is it trending up? Is it planing out? Is it up and down? How would you describe it based on what you've seen, Greg?
Yeah, a mixed bag, I think. I mean, it's one of those where, you know, I remember his first camp, and Baker kind of uses early camp to get his bearings for what he can get away with. And back in that amazing competition that he and Kyle Trask had in 23, at one point it was like Trask had 1 pick and Mayfield had like 9. And it's really just, he's pushing the envelope and trying to figure out what he can get away with on the field. So you've seen a couple picks. He had a John Bullock pick the one day that looked rough. Mm-hmm. More often than not, I think he seemed fine. And I'm probably been watching him more for his demeanor than his play. And he still seems pretty loose like Baker out there, man. It's like he'll go, you'll watch him on the sidelines and he's standing next to Bobby Slater, who's the head trainer, and he'll do the whole thing where you go to drink the bottle of water and he'll just squirt it out the side and hit the trainer instead. He's joking around with guys on defense, joking around with guys. He's still a really loose guy. I mean, I know this is a time where this could be stressful. This could be a time where you're aware of the uncertainty of what's ahead because you've let things go. You've kind of put the bet out there for the rest of the season. And that can go 2 different ways, but I think he's kind of put that behind him, if you will, or at least forward facing, looking at us saying it's behind him and there's not really a problem for him. I think he's done a good job of that. And that I don't notice a lot different from him in camp than he did a year ago when no one was talking about contract at all.
If anybody can compartmentalize something, right, it's Baker Mayfield. For all that he's been through, going back to college, you know, and his story is what it is. So when it's game time, he's all about ball, as I say. A couple things about Baker I think he's really tried to work on. The first one is his footwork. Mm-hmm. And that happens with the new quarterback's coach. But he's taking it to heart. And, you know, there's no way around it. I think he was injured. In fact, I know he was injured. And I think that led to the 10 touchdowns and 9 interceptions down the stretch and all those fourth quarter interceptions. I think the one thing that Zach Robinson is going to do, if he'll take advantage of it, and that is the flat is always open. You know, in this league, you know, if they don't cover it 10 times, you should throw it out there 10 times. And it's hard for Baker to do that. It's hard for quarterbacks to do it. Tom Brady played one of the most boring games ever. And you could say it, but it's so hard to do. You know, if they played cover two, he ran the football. If they played inside leverage, you throw it outside. Outside leverage, you throw it inside. They played back, you check it down. You play single high, I'm throwing it over your head. And he did it every single time.
Yeah.
Right? He took whatever was there. And I think Baker needs to learn that for his own protection. And in this offense, I've seen him really utilize those guys in the flat. He's got two running backs that can catch the ball and make yards, you know, and he doesn't have to drive it in there. But if he gets out of whack mechanically, he starts running around, he can make those splash plays and runs. But is it really sustainable? Have we seen that yet? Have we seen him go wire to wire as a guy that can stay healthy? You know, not play. You know, he goes, why is this even a question? What's a question? Because you may have played 51 games in the last 3 years, but you didn't play good or well those 51 games. And so, you know, I think Baker needs to take these tools that Zach has given him. But look, it's like his, what, 9th offense in 9 years or 10 and 10, whatever year he's in now. So this is the time where he's thinking a lot. It'll become reactive at some point. I think he's done an okay job. I don't think he's like beat the world out there, but Baker does. He knows how to prepare. I mean, he knows how to
There's
prepare
no doubt about
for a season.
Yeah.
So I think he's fine.
SRQ saw with the 499 super chat. Heard the Bucs ran 10 to 12 screen plays today. That's kind of been a staple in camp.
This is really
part of Zach Robinson's offense here. Rick, how did the running game look? You kind of talked about that. The vertical passing game.
Yeah.
The vertical passing game, I think, has not gone away, but it's more like it was under Liam Cohen, which is it's the short rhythmic passes to get that defense to come up and then hit you over the top. That's what we've seen be effective with Baker Mayfield, because you're not going to complete 71.4% of your passes like he did in 2024, setting a franchise record, Greg, by taking deep shots down the field. I think that was a strategic error by Josh Broussard, wanting to put too much Miami Dolphins with the vertical passing game in place last year. And we saw Baker's completion percentage drop as a result. We saw more field goals than touchdowns. We saw more drives in rather than continue. And I just think that this is more, Baker, we want you to be the field general. Get the ball into the hands of the playmakers, get the yak. And they got guys like Kenny Gainwell, Ted Hurst, that can flat out get it. Bucky is elusive. We know that. And you got some chain movers in Chris Godwin and Emeka Ebuka, and we've seen Emeka go down the field and make some plays too.
Yeah, I was thinking they were doing goal line, like it's probably Friday of last week. They run so many screens that I think the Bucs defense now is better against screens because they see it so much.
Yes.
There's a play where they wanted to go to Bucky on the right side, and Bain saw it. Bain went with Bucky, was so close on it
that the
screen pass hit him in the back of the helmet. And then he just kind of pushed Bucky to the ground. It's just like a victory. And that, again, I think they've seen it coming a lot, so they're defending the screen better. But I really think, I mean, it's not exciting. Fans don't necessarily love screens. But I think they wanted to be a good screen team last year and rarely got into it. The tunnel screen they liked to Godwin. There's a while there where Godwin was just a screen, you know, five screen targets a game. He really, and I didn't feel like it took off well all last year. But, like, Tez is a guy they like screening and getting in space.
Yes.
I think they'll be a much more effective screen game offense than they were last year.
Yeah. Rick, I'll throw this to you. We have Daniel Fisher super chat here, $1.99. Thank you so much, Daniel. Over under 57.5 sacks this season. We know Todd Bowles' stated goal every year get 50 sacks. And he has come up just short every year. He's at 46, 47, 48, except for last year, 37 sacks. Fell off the map. Do you think this is over under with the David Walkers, the Alex Anzalones, the Ruben Baines, the A'shaun Robinsons, the Elijah Roberts second year too, the Kalijah Kansi coming back to help out guys like Vita and Yaya Diaby?
57.5?
The over-under was
47.5.
Yeah. That's small.
That I think they'll be closer to that than certainly they were last year when they dropped off. If Todd Bowles' defense is playing well, they're going to get 45 plus every year, somewhere between 45 and 50. So it's a good place to set it right there in the middle. I think
what's
I'd
your call over well, under?
I think I'd take the over in this sense is that I think that they're going to have a chance to have the lead in the fourth quarter more than they have. You know, they play so many close games.
I agree.
I actually think that there's going to be some games where they can get the quarterback and bring the blitzes and the different things. I also think the front seven, it's going to be really hard, especially if Vita is back. I mean, all bets are off. But it's going to be really hard to run against his team. So I think they're going to get a lot more premium looks on third down, where it's third and predictable, third and long, third and six or more. That's really – you get your sacks two ways. Lead in the fourth quarter and then down in distance where teams are behind the chains all day. That's where the sacks come from. And I think in both cases, stop the run. And if you can have a fourth quarter lead where you can really get after guys and let Bowles can dial it up if you can stop the run using the front seven. If you don't have to bring those extra guys down in the box, then that's a different deal.
But he likes to. He likes to blitz Antoine Winfield Jr. Now he's got two guys with 4.3 speed and Jacob Parrish and Keontae Scott from the nickel.
But if you have to play him down there to stop the run on first down, that's a different deal, right? Like it's third down, if you're ahead of the sticks, bring him from all over. I don't care. But I think
I'm gonna say 48 sacks.
48.
I'm gonna hit the over. I'm gonna hit the over.
How
about you, Greg? What do you think?
I'll take the over, and I'll go 50. If you look at last year's numbers, there's a lot.
Should get 50.
If you look at last year's numbers, they're game by game. Okay, in that last nine where they lost 7 out of 9, their sack totals game by game: 1, 0, 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 2, 0. It's 12 sacks in 9 games to finish the year.
That's right.
And you can't win doing that. And I mean, they were averaging much more than that the first half of the season. So again, if they want it to look like the first half of last year, the 6-2 part of last year, getting 4 sacks a game, we'll go 3 sacks a game, that kind of thing. That'll go a long way to helping that.
Guys, Jay Wolfskill has a $1.99 super chat, and maybe we should take this $1.99 and put it towards the GoFundMe for Vita Vea. Does he need a GoFundMe? What's going to happen with Vita Vea? I've come to the conclusion this week. I was talking to one of our colleagues, Jay Retcher, and Josh Capo from Pewter Report. I think this is Vita's last year. I think they want him to play this year in Tampa. They might end up giving him a little bit of a pay bump. That's not coming from inside sources. I don't know. It's just a guess. If they want to get him back on the field, they might have to say, Vita, here's a couple extra million. Get out here and play your contract year. I think this is his last year. But does Vita need a GoFundMe page? Last time I checked, he's going to be making more than all three of us put together.
He's made like $75 million. He's doing all right. And I get why he wants more. And that's nice that I'm going to count Jay Wolf's put $2 toward the GoFundMe. It's indirectly through us. But we can pass that along to him if we need to. If Vita was on with us, we'd get, I can give him a quarter of the Super Chat fund, and that would help things.
Yes. We might need a lot more Super Chats tonight and the coming weeks to really make Vita feel special and feel like he should take the field again. Daniel Fisher with the Super Chat here. Thank you so much. You guys rock.
When does this show end?
Go Bucks.
When does this Vita
When does the show end?
The show I know is going to end.
We got about 11 more minutes, but
At some point. But this Vita Vea situation, good point. He's walking around the hotel. And he's going to meetings, and he's eating 3 meals a day. Yeah. Whatever. He's doing everything except play football.
He's furious. He wants out. He's so mad at the Bucks. He wants to be traded so bad that he got kidnapped by the team, taken to New York, where he has to go stand and watch practices.
And he's forced to smile while he's doing it, which is really odd.
Absolutely. And joke with Todd Bowles. Yeah.
He's having a good time, because he's having
there you can see the animosity right there between Vita Vea and Todd Bowles, right there.
Yeah, just seething animosity right there. I'm not an agent. I don't know what exactly is going on, but this needs to stop, right? Like,
yes.
If there's a number that could get him in the top 10, 5, 6, 7, 8, whatever that is, $1 million, and chip him up for this year, I know you don't want to make this a habit because the line will form at Jason Light's room, office door.
Right.
Or, you know, where's mine?
Yeah.
But you know what? You need the big son of a gun. You just do.
Yeah.
And you're not going to – you said you're not going to trade him. If you're going to trade him, you're not getting anything that's going to help you this year. Probably a third-round pick somewhere down the road. That's losing football. And you're trying to go for it. You're saying you're a Super Bowl team. Everybody out there is committed. Yeah. And maybe ownership needs to be committed too. You know, and look, I'm the guy that said, well, you sign a contract to get a plan. But you know what? Most of the time, the NFL doesn't do that unless it's guaranteed money. They cut guys all the time and still have years in the contract.
They'll cut you, yeah.
So $17 million is not where he should land right now. It's the deal he signed, and at the time it was fine. And the guys that are getting bumped up now are all under 30 years old by a significant margin. So, but this needs to stop. It just does. If he's not practicing and playing by the third preseason, but the week leading up to the third preseason game, preferably by the second preseason game, now what you're getting, even if he does come back, is a guy who hasn't played football. It's not going to be a good read of ale.
So, and he's probably going to be prone to injury too.
Absolutely.
Right, Rick? He's probably going to get there and pull a muscle or something. Yeah, I'm with you.
Absolutely.
Yeah. All right, we have a couple more minutes left here in the show. Let's get to our preview of the Bucs-Jets preseason game. We're obviously not going to sit here and predict a winner for this game. It doesn't count. It's exhibition. But who are some of the players that we're kind of excited to see? We've talked about some camp disappointments. Benjamin Morrison's not going to play. This would be the fourth preseason game he's missed since he became a Buccaneer. Hasn't played in one of them yet. We talked about Chris Braswell. Arrow's kind of pointing up for him. We talked about Ben Chukwuma, arrow pointing down. The last two practices, Chris Braswell has shown some signs of life. He needs to have a good game on Friday. So maybe let's start there. Rick, who needs to have a good game? And then who are you excited to see based upon what you've witnessed in camp? Give me a couple names.
Wow, that's who needs to have a good game. Boy, it's such a good question. I just don't think we're going to see any guys that are going to be counted on every day. But I want to see Ted Hurst, if he plays. I assume he will. I want to see Ted Hurst do something because I think game experience against the NFL. You know, they talk about the bright lights. This guy played at Georgia State. And he dominated what you want to see him do. But I want to see a guy who's physically superior to a lot of the guys who are going to be on that football field go out there and you know, hopefully Browning can get him the ball. You know, if he doesn't play, then obviously it'll be, you know, everybody else. But I think I want to see him look like he's a guy that can be counted on, especially against some players that, quite frankly, are going to be on practice squads when this thing kicks off. So, he would be my guy on offense. I mean, defensively, I don't know. I still think Walker needs to have a big game and prove that he is back. I want to see him dominate too, because I think if you get him in the mix as an extra pass rusher on this defense with all the edge guys they got,
huge.
Now you got something. Because I'd like to see him bounce inside a little bit. I'd like to see the versatility. Play him some in the interior and let him mismatch with some of those guards and see if he can beat him with his speed. Yeah. Those are the guys I'm going to be watching because I think those guys will actually have an impact on the season, you know?
I agree. Greg, how about you?
This is a week where it's really fun to watch the long shots for me. The guys that are playing the second half of this game that are fighting, just like their absolute peak is a practice squad job. But again, it gets you in the building. It's what you want as an undrafted rookie. So on offense, Dean Patterson's a guy from right here in Lutz, Steinbrenner High School. Has done really. You've had every other receiver the Bucs have has been dinged up in practice. So Dean's had three times as many targets as he should, and he's really made a lot out of
catching
it.
Catching some touchdowns too.
Right, catching touchdowns. So Dean Patterson's a guy again. Played at Georgia Tech. I think he had 12 catches at Georgia Tech last year. So like you would not expect. Oh, this guy will be in an NFL camp, but he's made plays, and he's competing against the Garrett Greens and the Dennis Houstons who were in the practice squad last year. Eric Rivers is another Georgia Tech guy. He's competing against. Defensively, If you don't know this name, okay, because it isn't Bane, it isn't David Walker, Yasir Holmes, okay, number 57, yeah. Undrafted rookie, went to Frostburg State and Tarleton State, okay?
That's right.
Tryout guy, didn't even get signed out of the draft, was a tryout player, got signed, but looks the part. And he's a guy, again, if I had to pick a guy, if you say I need somebody to get a second half sack Friday night, I think Yasir Holmes can be that guy. We talked about Aiden Garnes. Aiden Garnes, again, keeps showing up, keeps getting thrown out there with the ones because Benjamin Morrison is not out there with the ones. And he's made plays. He's confident. I think, Peter, I think you guys even talked to him on camera. Sounded like he knew what he was doing.
For sure. And
undrafted rookie out of Arizona. This is where these guys, I mean, again, it's like they just brought back Roman Parodi, okay, as a corner that had a pick six last year. Pick six in preseason, gets injured in August, has to take an injury settlement, just drops off the NFL radar. Barely played in the UFL, played an entire season in the UFL and had seven tackles, but you get enough corner injuries and he's back on a roster. When we showed that B-roll, he's in there wearing number 37. Mm-hmm. Roman Parodi, again, if you can get a pick six in a preseason game, the entire league will have tape on you. And when they need to get a corner in week four, they're going to bring you in and give you a look. So those are the guys I'm looking for on Friday night.
The guys I want to see are Josiah Trotter. I've become just a huge fan of his in terms of that. Did we lose Rick?
We lost Rick. He made it 57 minutes. So we
lost Rick, but we're going to roll on here. We're going to finish the show with just you and I. There we go. Okay. So I'm looking forward to seeing Josiah Trotter. I want to see him be really physical and go downhill. I want to see a splash player too. I want to see a sack. I want to see a pass break up an interception. I think he's capable of doing that, Greg. The other guy that I'm really anxious to see, Elijah Roberts. He has really been a menace, a defensive tackle. Kind of does the dirty work. He plays that 4-I-5 technique. Remember that old Will Golston job, that role that he used to play and plays so well. To me, I think he's had a really good camp, has not gotten nearly as enough buzz. So I'm looking forward to seeing him. I'm curious to see what type of calls that Zach Robinson calls as well. I'm looking for him to, it's going to be vanilla in terms of play calling, but it's going to be a little bit of an introduction to the Bucs offense with Zach Robinson. Sure. And, I'm just kind of excited to see what he does because, vanilla sometimes can taste good, fellas. Like if it's like Breyers ice cream, it's really good vanilla, right? So I want to see some really good vanilla from Zach Robinson on Friday night. We have another super chat to get to as Rick joins the chat again. SRQ Salt. Okay, gray beards. I'm one too. I can't grow a beard. So technically, I will never be a gray beard. I might be a gray hair. I've got some up here, but I'll never be a gray
beard. You're just talking to me. I'm the only one with a gray beard here. That's fine.
Yeah. Got to go fund the PR pod. Well, greatly appreciate that. Thank you so much for all of your super chats tonight. Really greatly appreciate the audience that's tuned in. Just a reminder, we're doing this every Tuesday night throughout the entire season, the preseason, the season, hopefully the postseason, Buccaneer fans. That would be fun. And the offseason as well. This is a year-long endeavor here at the Bucs Collective. Do us a favor. Spread the word. Help us get the word out. Hit subscribe on your YouTube channel. That's at Bucs Collective. Super easy to remember. Hit the subscribe button. Also, give us a like. Leave a comment. When you do those things, it helps us with our reach and gets us out there in front of more awesome Bucs fans. So greatly appreciate that. We're looking forward to covering this Friday's preseason game. It's preseason. I'm one of these guys that once training camp starts, I'm done with it after a day or two. I'm ready to fast forward to the preseason game. Then when you get to the first preseason game, I'm ready to fast forward to the regular season. But this preseason, and just a quick 30-second hit for both of you here, I think there's so much talent on this Bucs team. There's so much interesting depth that this might be an actually entertaining preseason. They're going to cut some good players. This Buccaneer practice squad might be one of the best and most talented that this team has fielded in some time. And that means these preseason games might be even more interesting and entertaining because you're not playing Scrub McGee. There might not be too many Scrub McGees in Tampa this year, Rick. Oh. We have lost Rick's audio there. All right. We'll go to you, Greg. Go ahead and
Rick, Rick had something good to say. I know he did. I'm going to talk about receiver depth. Receiver depth is off the charts for this team, and that there are guys like David Sills and Cam Johnson that are barely on this roster and fighting for spots. And Rick's back. We'll get back to it. Receiver depth for me, Cam Johnson, David Sills. David might be he's hurt. He might play. But you're going to see depth at receiver in the second half Friday night. Rick, back to you.
Yeah, no, I was going to say receiving. I think that's big. Obviously, corner is too. And I want to see these quarterbacks play. I want to see Jalen Daniels. I think there's – I know it's trite. You know, you say, well, who's going to be the third quarterback? Look, you never know what's going to happen. I mean, we had number two get hurt today. And so for the future, he's a quick twitch guy. He's got a cannon for an arm, and he can make plays with his feet. This is the perfect scenario for a guy like this to go out when the lights come on and really shine and make an impact.
Hopefully you think we've shined tonight here at the Bucks Collective. Make sure you tune in every Tuesday night live at 7 o'clock. We'll be back next week after some Bucks preseason football against the Jets. We'll see you. Have a great night.